Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nonprofit U, a forum where nonprofit stakeholders can share lessons learned and discuss the latest developments in the industry. My name is Valerie Leonard, your host. I'm a consultant to nonprofits, and I specialize in community and organizational development. I work with nonprofit organizations to help them make a stronger impact to their clients and communities. You can find Nonprofit U on Facebook and Twitter, and I encourage you to follow us and to comment early and often using the hashtags NonprofitU, Joan Gary, or Nonprofits Are Messy. You can also leave comments on blogtalkradio.com/nonprofit_U. The chat room is open, and you can post comments and questions. In order to use the chat room, you must open a listener-only account, and you can find a link to open the account on the page for this episode. You can also email me questions at consulting@valerieflenard.com. We'll be taking questions by phone and from our chat room at about the 20-minute mark or so. The call-in number is area code 347-884-8121. Again, that number is area code 347-884-8121. Today's topic is Nonprofits Are Messy. We'll talk about the issues surrounding nonprofit leadership using examples from Joan Gary's experiences and her new book, Joan Gary's Guide to Nonprofit Leadership. Again, we encourage you to call in with questions at about the 20-minute mark. You can start posting in the chat room now and emailing questions. Again, my email address is consulting@valerieflenard.com. If you want to participate in a live chat, you must open an account, and the link is found on the episode page. The call-in number again is 347-884-8121. Nonprofit and community development professionals are especially encouraged to call in and share your probably war stories by now and your strategies. You know how that goes, right? So, today's guest is Joan Gary, a nationally recognized nonprofit thought leader and principal of Joan Gary Consulting. For nearly a decade, Joan served as the executive director of GLAAD, one of the largest gay rights organizations in the country, where she launched several successful media campaigns, including GLAAD's successful campaign to lobby the New York Times to include same-sex wedding announcements in its style section. She later acted as the co-chair of Barack Obama's LGBT Finance Committee during his 2008 presidential campaign. Joan now works with nonprofit leaders, assisting with crisis management, executive coaching, and the building of strong management teams to support the work of the CEO. She also teaches nonprofit media strategy as a professor at the Annenberg School for Communications at the University of Pennsylvania and is a blogger for the Huffington Post. Joan's nonprofit work began after 14 years in executive positions in corporate entertainment, including her role as a member of the management team that launched MTV in 1981. So thanks for joining us today, Joan. Before we get started, can you share an overview of some of the most prevalent issues surrounding nonprofit leadership that you've encountered over the years?
You bet. Valerie, thank you very much, and thank you for the work that you're doing to sort of share these resources with nonprofit leaders through this podcast. I have certainly found that people are really hungry to learn more so that they can know more and do more. You know, I'd say the answer to your question, Valerie, I think is there are two pieces. I think one of the most prevalent issues surrounding nonprofits today is the relationship between the staff and the board of a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very often I find tension, animosity that stems from a lack of role clarity between the two of them, where
mm-hmm.
the expectations from staff to board are very high, but that the role hasn't been very clearly defined for board members. I have, in fact, it led me to become a certified mediator because so often I was dealing with tensions between the board chair and the executive director
wow.
of an organization. So I think this is sort of this relationship, and I like to think about really fine nonprofits like Twin Engine Jets, and that these two entities are really those engines, and they really have to work very, very much in tandem. The second thing that I think is prevalent, and it goes to why I talk about nonprofits being messy, is I think it's something that you really have to understand about nonprofits is that they're sort of designed in this kind of messy way, where you have really super passionate people who work crazy hours because they're so passionate. They are often underpaid. Then they have to corral tons and tons of hopefully tons of volunteers. And they're also managed, they're managed by volunteers who are supposed to give tons of time. They're supposed to go out and raise money. They're supposed to give money. And like when you put all of that together, it's actually really kind of messy. And managing that mess is, I think, one of the real challenges and honestly one of the real opportunities of nonprofit leadership.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is awesome. So what are some of the lessons that you've learned along the way? And you can share some of the lessons that let us know that you were on the right course. And then I'm sure there's at least one. Every one of us has at least one of those lessons that we will never, ever, ever forget.
Can I start with the good ones first?
Yes.
I'll be happy before I'm humble. So I came to nonprofit work from the for-profit sector, where people were driven to come to work every day. Sure, MTV, and then I worked at Showtime. People were really passionate about the programming. But at the end of the day, it was a lot about how much money you made and what bonus you collected at the end of the year. And I think one of the things that I have learned about the thing that I so admire about the nonprofit landscape is that You're not working with people who are driven to come to work every day by how much their year-end bonus is going to be. And so as a result, you have to manage them differently. And I think one of the lessons I've learned by being in the nonprofit sector for a while and also as a consultant is that you have to learn how to manage people three-dimensionally. They are full-fledged human beings who came to nonprofit work because they're passionate, because they have skills to contribute, but also because they want a voice. And so I think one of the lessons that I've learned is this whole notion that that you get so much out of, and there's just an incredible richness to being a part of a nonprofit organization because you actually are working with people in this very three-dimensional way. And you really get to understand and hear the voices of all the staff, whether they are your most junior or your most senior. So I'd say that's on the good side. I think that's something that I think that most people don't really realize about the nonprofit sector that I think is important to talk about. A lesson that I've learned I try not to repeat. it's one of the things that I start talking about in my book is that your passion for the organization, as I was an executive director, can actually almost send you right over the edge. Right, as that you just become sort of you can have this risk of becoming a completely crazy person. And my story is that I showed up at a board meeting. It was in Chicago, actually. And I flew from New York, and my development director flew from Los Angeles. And she walked into the boardroom, and she did not look well. And I had heard she wasn't feeling that well. And then I also looked, and I realized that she had some kind of something was funny about her blouse. And I realized that my development director was wearing a heart monitor. And that the intensity and the stress of the job had caused her to have palpitations, which led her doctor to put her on a heart monitor. Now, the only thing crazier than my not saying, Julie, you need to go home, is that Julie got on a plane to begin with. So we were both crazy knuckleheads. And it turns out Julie was fine, and the board meeting was a huge success, but it was a complete and utter wake-up call for me and for Julie about the fact that neither of us actually said, this is crazy, you're on a heart monitor, what the heck are you doing here, get on the next flight home. And like the lengths that you go to, and that really is, and you know, Beth Cantor, who is another excellent, excellent nonprofit resource and blogger in this space, has written a book called The Happy Healthy Nonprofit, where she talks about self-care as being absolutely critical to nonprofit success. And I feel like I learned that the hard way.
Yes. Well, I thank you for sharing. Most people are not that transparent, and I really appreciate your transparency. You know, because once we have quote unquote arrived, we want everybody to think that we're all that, and we're all that image, right? We don't want to bear the chinks in our armor. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I felt like when I started my blog at joangary.com back in 2012, that I felt like that was going to be what I was going to bring to the table, was a sort of an authenticity about what working in that sector is like. And I've played essentially every position on the nonprofit field. I started as a corporate sponsor, an executive director. I've been a board member. I'm a donor to a number of organizations, and now a consultant. And so, I bring a lot of authenticity, both the good stuff and the bad stuff, to everything I write.
And we appreciate that. You state that in your experiences as the executive director of GLAAD, the partnership between your board chair and you was, quote, at the core of what was a robust, strategic, and effective nonprofit organization. In fact, your leadership chemistry was so great, you used Karen as a model to develop a comprehensive checklist of attributes of great nonprofit board chairs. Can you share a few of these attributes and let our audience know where they can find it on your website?
Yeah, sure. First of all, Karen, I don't think too many executive directors who write books actually acknowledge, one of their board chairs in the acknowledgement section of the book. And so it is a testament to Karen that she gets a shout out from me, both on my blog and in my book. You can start by just saying really quickly that there's a piece on my blog at joangary.com, and that's with two R's, and it's just called the 5-star board chair checklist. And you can just actually Google that, and you'll find it that way as well, the 5-star board chair checklist. And I start by talking about what a 5-star board chair isn't, and in really rapid fire, I can tell you it is someone who is you're not looking for someone who is a micromanager. You're looking for somebody who is unavailable. You're not looking for somebody for whom the power of that credential on their CV is somehow important. And you're not looking for somebody who, frankly, was like in the restroom when they voted for board chair and they were the only person that actually, was available, right? It's like, so often board chairs are selected because nobody else will do it. And it's a huge, huge disservice to the organization. And so when I make this list, and I'll just give you a couple of them, what I'll say is that I know that there are people that are going to listen to this and say, well, that's great, Joan. And if you find anybody like that, we should have them canonized because they must be saints and ain't anywhere near my nonprofit, right? But what you're looking for
You know, if you're looking for somebody, first of all, who's deeply passionate about the mission of the organization, that's the number one criteria for anybody, staff or board, regardless of position. Do they actually respect the CEO? Do they have enough time? And when I talk about time, they're also, you're looking for schedule autonomy, right? They don't have to be retired, and they don't, but they have to have some ability to have a meeting with you during a business day. They have to be able to ask tough questions constructively. I find that nonprofit executive directors have much thinner skin than people think they do. they have to understand that managing the board, right, that shaping it, who's on it, how effective it is their job. So that's, you know, mentoring and guiding and shaping leaders and committee chairs. And it's a big job. And then, and I would say also, you want somebody who can model good fundraising behavior, right? You can't have somebody who's your board chair who you know, when you say the word fundraising, they scrunch their face up like they just ate a bowl of lima beans or something, right? So, you know, it has to be somebody who not only understands the role, but is a champion for it. And at the end of the day, what you're really looking for is you're looking for a thought partner, somebody you can kick the tires with, somebody who you can be honest with, somebody who can say, you know what, I don't think I did this very well. Can you help me on this? Right? That's what it is. It's a thought partner.
Oh, that's awesome. You know what I like about your checklist is it's so human. You know, it's not this, you know, check, got this, got that. You know, it's really a personification of this ideal person. And yes, Karen should be canonized.
Let me tell you what, I'm also a fan of co-chairs. I'm a fan of chairs and vice chairs because, you know, Mother Teresa isn't always available to be your board chair. So, you know, right? So if you can get two different people, you know, and one of them is out of town or, you know, one of them has a particular strength. So one of them is a keen fundraiser and the other one is great on like organizational development or something like that. You know, so the co-chair thing it can be a pretty good model that I think more nonprofits should take a look at.
Awesome. Okay. I just want to remind our listening audience that you're listening to Nonprofit U, and we're speaking with Joan Gary. She's principal with Joan Gary Consulting. We'll take questions from our listening audience and chat room in about 5 minutes. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. Again, that number is 347-884-8121.
Valerie, don't you think we ought to talk about fundraising?
Yes. We do. We need to demystify it. You know, all too often we think of fundraising as this thing that only, quote unquote, gifted people can do. But you know, I know that you are a very outgoing person, and you've done some sales in your previous life, but you were able to transfer a lot of those skills into nonprofit. So can you share with us how you transferred your corporate skills? You know, one is a corporate sponsor, and, you know, and you were also an executive. You know, how did you transfer those skills into nonprofit, both as a manager and as a fundraiser?
So the first thing you should know, Valerie, is that when I arrived at GLAAD, I had no fundraising experience. And I really had done very little sales of any sort. And so, you know, leave it to a nonprofit board to go ahead and hire an executive director for an organization that at that time was in really pretty deep financial trouble. Leave it to a nonprofit board to hire somebody with no fundraising experience as their new executive director. Here's the thing. What you talked about was skills, Valerie, and I think what you really need to be, what people need to be looking about is attributes.
Okay.
Because what fundraising really is it's relationship building and storytelling. Right? So here's my, so there's kind of three things. So Julie, the one I just mentioned earlier, who arrived at the board meeting on the heart monitor, I think she actually probably almost had a heart attack when I was hired because I had no fundraising experience and she had seen the financials and I had not. But Julie, she said, okay, great. They hired somebody who's never fundraised before. And so we were getting ready to go out on our first ask. And she says to me, okay, Joan, I want you to know something really important. I said, okay. She said, it makes people feel really good to give money to causes they care about. I was like, really? She's like, yes. I was like, let's go. Because what you find is most people who run nonprofits are fundamentally pleasers. So if I could actually make somebody happy by giving them the opportunity to feel good by donating to a cause they cared about, like I was so there. So that was one thing, right? It makes people feel good to give money to causes they care about. The second thing is an equation that I've sort of created and I use when I use with clients and in workshops and things like that, is that is the centrality of storytelling to the ability to raise money. And my equation goes like this. You take a credible ambassador for the organization, could be a lead volunteer, a board member, a staff member. So credible ambassador plus compelling story that brings the work to life equals a check. Equals a check, right? If I, as a board chair, can learn to tell like a really good story after getting to know that prospect, asking them to write a check is the easiest part. The last thing I just really want to say is that if you're on a board, or if you're, you know, if you're on a board and you say, I'm afraid to fundraise, I don't want to ask my friends for money, I really don't think I can ask, maybe I can sell a ticket, but I don't know that I could really ask. You have to really look at yourself in the mirror and ask this question. Is your passion for this organization greater than your fear of asking for money?
Wow.
And if your passion for the organization is not greater than your fear, then you should not be on that board.
I love it. That should be an interview question for board members.
Yes. But I mean, that assumes that the board recruitment committee is making it very, very clear that the board member has fundraising obligations and that there is an expectation that they're going to do that.
Okay, and what I love about your book, Nonprofits Are Messy, actually it's a guide to nonprofit leadership because nonprofits are messy. And
correct.
I think you touched on some of the things that inspired you to write the book, but one of the favorite parts of the book that I like is when you talk about the superheroes. You know, I like to talk about, you know, Superman's not going to save us, but you had a whole list of different superheroes for different situations when it comes to hiring people. And you know, can you share with us a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, sure. And I would say that on your question about what inspired me to write a book, I just wanted to say that I didn't write a book just because I thought it would be a good thing to do. Like I did a lot of homework about what wasn't out there for people. And I wanted to know that I could actually fill a gap. And I found that there was not a resource out there that was written that could be read by both a staff leader and a board leader. Because I don't think it matters whether you're paid or unpaid, that the issues are exactly the same. Can you tell a good story? Can you ask for money? What do you do when there's a leadership transition? All of those things are, if you think about my model of a great nonprofit as a twin engine jet and a board chair and a CEO as co-pilots, then this is, you know, I wanted to write a book that was sort of a guide to fly in the plane, right? So I couldn't believe that there wasn't anything out there that could be read by both cohorts. And And there also, I wanted to make sure that there were topics that I could cover that were not covered elsewhere in anything that I had read. And there were two that specifically that came up. And one was about this issue of storytelling, which I think is central to nonprofit leadership. And everyone that ever writes about leadership talks about great leaders as great storytellers. And the other one is the one that nonprofit leaders sort of refuse to think about because they're such optimists, which is, you know, sort of what happens when it hits the fan. Does crisis management look like? But on the flip side, you know, and this is a little bit about my style, you know, sort of look at, you know, sort of who do you want as your next executive director or your next board chair? Do you want Superman? Do you want Spider-Man? Do you want Gumby? Do you want Kermit? I've since added Katniss to add some gender balance to it. But you know, you got Superman, who's a command and control, right? Which doesn't typically work in a nonprofit setting. You know, Spider-Man is just rich with integrity, but at its fundamentally, Peter Parker's a super insecure guy, and insecurity will come and get you as a leader. The thing that will really come and get you as a leader is being overly pleasing and saying yes to everyone, and that's what Gumby does, right? He'll bend over backwards to make you happy. And your goal is not to make, as a nonprofit leader, is not to make everybody happy. Your job is to focus on that North Star, which is your mission, and that every action you take has to feel in your gut like it's in the service of that North Star. And Gumby's not able to do that. And so I land on Kermit as the ideal nonprofit leader at the board or the staff level because he's humble. Because he's a team player. He kind of is a great orchestra conductor, right? We know that he digs diversity, right? And there's not a whole bunch of frogs in his club, right? He's really diplomatic. He wants to hear what everybody has to say, but he has a vision. He's going to put on that show, right? He's going to put on that show, and that everybody's going to play their own part in making sure that show is a success. And then, the last thing I joke about is that, of course, he also knows how to deal with high-maintenance people. And if you're a nonprofit leader, you've always got a high-maintenance board member, a high-maintenance donor, and, you know, Kermit has Miss Piggy. So, I used it because I think it's a pretty accessible way of thinking about it. And in the book, I go into quite a lot of detail about, okay, so let's be honest. If you tend to be somebody who's kind of Gumby-like, how do you contend with that? Like, not everybody's Kermit. So how do you, how do you compensate, you know, if you're sort of command and control, and how do you, not everybody's hardwired, like Kermit. And I believe that everybody can change and educate themselves and develop different strategies for overcoming some of their own sort of liabilities, leadership liabilities, because not everybody's great at everything.
Right, and I love that approach because, you know, all too often when we think of a CEO of an organization, we have a stereotype in our mind, and usually the stereotype that comes to mind is the Superman. Thank you so
Yeah, I think it's also true, though. I think different stages of a nonprofit's life calls for different people, right? So at the beginning, I arrive at a nonprofit that's in trouble. I'm probably going to take a lot more charge than I am once the organization is steady and we're thinking about where we're going to go next. So, you know, you evolve, and so that's why you have to sort of think about these prototypes and where they make the most sense, and how to compensate for, you know, the fact that you might be somebody who's a little bit more of a pleaser or a little bit more insecure, those sorts of things. So,
Okay, I'm going to check and see if this caller has a question for you before we go. You can hold on just a moment. Okay, caller, you're at area code 773-624-0585. You've been listening for the past half hour. Did you have any questions or comments?
Hi, Valerie.
Hi,
all right, this is David Pendleton.
Yes.
Really just a comment, just thanking Joan for, I've been reading and listening to her for 2 years. I'm on her mailing list.
Nice.
And just really just giving her a thank you for giving me so much that nobody wants to listen to, but I know it's true. So I fight the good fight, and believe me, I know how to say no. Thank her for taking your call and being a partner with you.
Hey, David, thank you very much. What nonprofit are you connected to?
Door of Hope Rescue Mission in Chicago.
What do you do?
We're a Christian organization for homeless men.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, for men who are homeless, I think that's a better description. And I've had two transitions with my board of directors, and I finally have created the power to fire them. So I'm reorganizing and putting things together where we can actually function. And most of what you're saying is exactly what I believe. And I'm glad that I'm on the right track.
Well, I'm really glad you're on the right track, and I'm sure that every guy that comes into that shelter is super happy you're on the right track too.
Oh, we have great meetings. We just had one that lasted 3 hours earlier.
That's awesome. Anyway,
I appreciate
the kind words. It's actually one of the things that really motivates me to write, and is that I've you know, it's just really gratifying to hear that anything that you have to say actually has some value or affirms what you're thinking, all that. So it's great. So thank you for that.
I have a URL page called Mission Possible that 80% of its posts are your stuff on Facebook.
Wow. That's awesome.
Thank you so much, David.
I'm a fan.
I really, really appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
Thanks, David.
Yes.
Thank you, Val.
Okay, thank you. Alrighty, so Joan, I've got one more question. I realize that we are a little bit over, but you know, there's a burning question about millennials. You know, for the very first time, they have outnumbered us baby boomers in the workforce. And on top of this, a number of other dynamics are impacting the nonprofit sector that we're seeing more leadership transitions. And you devote a whole chapter to leadership transition in your book. Can you share with us any sage advice on leadership transition?
Well, I can share some advice, and then your listeners can decide whether it's sage or not. I can tell you that, you know, the first thing to say is that it should, you know, what's the average tenure of a nonprofit executive director or a board chair? Is it 5 years? Is it 7 years? I don't know, but it's not, you know, it's not 20 years, right? So
right.
Your organization is always pretty close to a leadership transition. Either somebody's moving out, somebody's moving in, right? And so mm-hmm. somehow or another, it seems to catch organizations by surprise that people leave. Like, I don't get that. Like, it shouldn't
right.
surprise them. Right. The same is true with board chairs, right? Is they usually, what do they get? You know, if you have term limits, you get like 2 years, something like that, right? So
right.
so it infuriates me, actually. It's one of the reasons I wrote the chapter, is that people just don't think about it. So having a succession plan, a real honest-to-goodness succession plan, not just like, and I've heard this a million times, this is not like, okay, it's time for us once a year. We have to go into executive session without our executive director and say, okay, let's just talk for a few minutes about what happens if Joan gets hit by a bus. I don't know why they always have to frame it that way, but it's always framed like
right.
that. It's time to talk about what happens if Joan gets hit by a bus, right? And so they have this mm-hmm. conversation that kind of goes nowhere, and then they say they've had it. So real live succession planning, it should be something an organization does. It should be embedded in any kind of strategic plan that an organization creates, however simple or straightforward it may be. The second thing is you just have to recognize that leadership transitions are the single most destabilizing things that happen to nonprofits because your leader leaves. right? And so you have to take it so seriously. And I have this other phrase, weak boards will always make bad hires, and strong boards often make bad hires. Is that you have to approach this job like a full-time job with intention in order to make the best possible hire. And the last thing I will say that is related to that is, and I did a podcast with a guy named Don Tebbe, and you can find my podcast on iTunes. It's called Nonprofits Are Messy, and we cover a whole bunch of subjects. But I think it was 2 weeks ago I did something on leadership transitions, nice 30-minute interview for your elliptical machine or your drive to work, right? And in that chapter, the thing that we talk about is the single biggest problem is that board members are volunteers. They get a candidate pool, and they pick the best of that candidate pool, whether that candidate pool is strong or whether it's mediocre. And the single biggest mistake that organizations make is that they select a candidate who is the best of a mediocre lot because they're volunteers, they want to check it off their list, and they won't, and they just don't want to keep the search open. So the single biggest piece of advice I could give is make sure your board is as strong as it can possibly be, because a leadership transition is like taking your boat out into very choppy waters. And so the captain and crew have to be super strong, and they have to be strong enough to say, no, we do not have a strong enough candidate pool for the work that we do. We've got to keep it open until the right candidate comes along. Because the best of a mediocre lot, you can talk yourself into the best of a mediocre lot, and organizations do it all the time.
Wow. Yeah, hiring under duress is the worst thing, I think.
You bet. You're totally right.
I've experienced it.
Yep.
We don't have enough time to go through that horror story.
No, but there. I think you opened by talking about war stories. There are a lot of war stories in that category.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So we've come to the end of our show, and I'd like to thank you again, Joan. Joan Gary is the principal of Joan Gary Consulting. And before we go, would you care to have any parting thoughts and tell us how we can reach you and tell us where we can buy your book and all that good stuff?
Oh, thanks. So my book is on Amazon. My book will be available in bookstores beginning on March 6th. You can pre-order it now at a discount on Amazon.com. Just Google Joan Gary, G-A-R-R-Y. Feel free. David actually was I didn't pay him or anything. He was just a great, did a great advertisement for my blog. I write weekly. And that's actually easy to remember. That's just joangary.com, J-O-A-N is Nancy, G-A-R-R-Y.com. And my podcast on iTunes is called Nonprofits Are Messy. My book is called Joan Gary's Guide to Nonprofit Leadership. I think my parting comment is one of the reasons I have become a bit of a nonprofit evangelist is because not very long after I got to my nonprofit leadership job, I realized that not very many people get paid. However you think about your paycheck, but not very many people have the joy and privilege of being paid to make such a difference in the world, to change the world for clients and communities. It's a joy and it's a privilege. And I one of the reasons I write a lot of stuff that's funny is because I want people to remember the joy and the humor that comes with being a nonprofit leader. It's very serious work, but it's also just a joy and a privilege.
Yes. And David is, indirectly responsible for your being a guest. He was like, Valerie, you have to read about Joan Gary. And then I started reading and I got hooked. And now every week I put some of your blog entries, put links to them in my email newsletter, and people just love it. So
that's awesome.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. David, thank you.
And David, I have you on one more time to see if you have any closing remarks. You know, I, bringing Joan and me together. Okay, so David is no longer with us. But again, I want to thank our listening audience for listening to Nonprofit You today. The show will be available for download within about an hour. Be sure to tune in next week for a discussion with Amalia Nieto Gomez. She's the Executive Director of the Alliance of the Southeast, and we're going to be talking about how they use comprehensive community engagement strategies to actually drive democracy and community planning, if you can imagine such a thing in Chicago. All right, so, you may be from the East Coast, but it sounds like you know a little bit of something about Chicago, Joe.
I've been around, Valerie.
Okay, so thanks again.
My pleasure.
And you take, care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.